Well, we're going to have a meeting with Vladimir Putin, and at the end of that meeting, probably in the first 2 minutes, I'll know exactly whether or not a deal can be made. Because that's what I do. I make deals.
Zach Abraham, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'd love to be a fly on the wall with Trump and Putin.
Let's think of like the range of outcomes that could come out of this meeting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost infinite. You know what I mean? I the world is a very complex place, and it feels as though it's getting more complex on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, Trump tried to sort of put pressure on them, limiting the amount of time before secondary tariffs take effect. And so we talked about secondary tariffs against their trading partners and whether that would put enough pressure on Russia. I mean, from a global, let's say the best scenario, right, is they reach terms for peace between Russia and Ukraine somehow, some path to it at least. What does that do to the global economy? Does it do anything overnight?
Not really, because you're talking about two countries that aren't big players in the global economy. I mean, Russia's not insignificant, but it's not going to drastically change their output of any. And truthfully, in real terms, their output hasn't been that hampered anyway. I mean, they've basically proven that all the fuel embargoes and all that kind of stuff, they got right around it and by just selling it to India. I don't really think it has a big impact on the globe. I would think you might see a little bit of downward movement on oil, but I doubt a lot. Because I just think it's really hard to make an argument that there's a war premium priced into this Russia-Ukraine thing any longer.
Yeah.
Not with oil trading where it is. So I doubt it has a big impact.
One of the things I think Trump is really smart about is, you know, he looks at leaders and kind of knows, I guess, what they want. I mean, he talks a lot about, like, Russia could be so wealthy. Russia could be such a wealthy country if it just got out of this war and stopped spending all this money in Ukraine. You know, he did that in the Middle East, too, is like, you know, I want everyone to have an opportunity to share in all this wealth. You can't appeal to a Vladimir Putin with your heart. You know, like, oh, people are dying, Russians are dying. He doesn't care. But money, maybe he does care about that.
Look, yeah, I mean, and part of it's just culture, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Russian culture is by definition, it's tougher, harder.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be able to pull on the heartstrings quite as easily. It's interesting because I think Trump is much better at reading the tea leaves with this stuff than most people give him credit for. I don't think that he's as much of a bull in a china closet as is perceived. That being said, I really don't know that this is nearly as much about economic gains for Russia. Is it for what they see as security?
Yeah.
And what they see as rightly or wrongly something that they see as theirs. And people go, rightly or wrongly, are you a Russia apologist? No, but I mean, I just think that there's a lot more nuance in this situation than gives credit for being. I mean, you're talking about, we're using words like invasion and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, guys, I think it's important to point out that these are countries that have shared the same borders, you know, back and forth multiple times over the last several hundred years. So this is a pretty long storied relationship, you know, and Ukraine has incredible strategic advantages due to its access to, I believe it's the Black Sea, if I'm misquoting that, it's wrong, but that's of huge importance. It's a huge export station for Russian gas. Then you look at the breadbasket that is the Crimea, which is why they moved into there. But more importantly, if you had an invading force going into Russia, effectively, and I'm not a geopolitical military expert, but effectively, the only real viable path in via land would be that pathway through Ukraine. And so that's always been seen as a very strategic you know, the reunite the USSR types that were inside, and Putin has been rumored to be one of those guys. You know, it was kind of a reunification. I think that they feel very similarly about Ukraine as China feels about Taiwan. And I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, lack the nuance or maybe even the desire to try to understand these things. But it's got all these situations around the world where I don't really know what the incentive is. I mean, you know, the other thing is, I think there's probably an element of Putin where he feels like he's fighting for his country's survival. And people go, what do you mean? He's not the one threatening. You got to look inside of Russia. I mean, their demographics are horrific. I mean, but if something doesn't drastically change the arc of the demographics, you're talking about a country that by 2050 may not really have enough people to be a country. I mean, you're looking at population collapse. So, I think all of the, and the reason I think that these are important things to bring up is I think the Russians, one, I think it's clear, are far more committed to this Ukraine thing than anybody thought on the onset, on the outset. And I think a big reason for it is what I just said. I think that they are far more desperate to turn the tide on some of these things than the world is giving them credit for. And I think the reason that's important is, desperate people do desperate things.
Well, if they're worried about population collapse, they probably shouldn't kill off most of their young men of reproducing age in a war, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's not helping, is it? Right? It's yeah, I don't the frustrating part about this whole war for me is it doesn't really matter what you think, right? That it is completely pointless for this war to continue on because I mean, you just keep having people dying. And as the body count goes up, when you look at where both countries are, neither has an incentive to give in. They just don't. Russia's put too much blood and treasure in the ground. Ukraine's held out this long. Why would they give up now? I just don't see. It's a mess.
Yeah,
It's a mess.
and I'm not an expert on Putin or the conflict by any means, but I think all of us know enough about him and his personality that he's not going to walk away with nothing or for nothing. So
No.
Trump has to bring something significant to the table. What I just want to see, almost more than anything else, I mean, stopping war is great and all of that. I want to see what kind of creative ways the media spins this if Trump helps reach a deal. If Trump helps end the war in Ukraine, I can't wait to see how the media is going to paint that as actually a bad thing or not his accomplishment.
Yeah, I man, that stuff, yeah, it's so frustrating
It
to me
is.
because you're just, can we just tell the truth, right? Good and bad, right? Good and bad. Can we just tell the truth? And can we as people just demand it? Like where did that old attitude go of, hey, we don't need the truth filtered for us wherever it takes us. We're big boys, we're big girls, we can
Yeah,
handle it.
most of
I'd
us.
rather know the truth. Yeah. But I mean, it's, I was just listening to an interview about the CIA classification and how there's a lot of stuff that should be released that the CIA isn't releasing. And there's a look, I'm sure there's reasons behind some of it, but it's also kind of the ever creeping of the nanny state. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And just and then the constituency themselves accepts it. It just drives me nuts. Like, demand truth. Like, that's the democracy dies, in an absence of truth. And it just, God, it irritates me.
Yeah, otherwise people are just using you as a vessel. I don't know how anybody
Yeah.
want to be controlled like that. This is Doge Watch still after all. So this is interesting. I didn't even know this was still going on. An appeals court has just ruled that the Department of Government Efficiency can access sensitive data stored by three federal agencies. So remember, like, the left was freaking out. Oh, Elon Musk is going to have all your social security numbers and all this stuff, which is like, okay, but he's working for the government. And so all the government has these things. So it was Education Department, Treasury Department, and the Office of Personnel Management. So I guess up until now, because of a lower court ruling, Doge hadn't been able to access what was considered personal data within those agencies to help them root out waste and fraud. So maybe they're especially, I mean, Department of Education, Treasury, Office of Personnel Management, which sounds boring, but it actually is fairly significant. I mean, you could have another round of Doge findings now that they actually have the data they need to do their jobs.
Actually, it kind of reminded me of the virus. Some of the pushback against Doge, because you'd hear people say things, and on the face of it, they were just grotesquely inaccurate. And you're kind of looking at them going, you can't really believe that, right? Like, when all of this started about Musk and everybody fired up, he doesn't have access, he can't cut. And you're like, yeah, he can't. So don't worry about it. He's not going to be the one actually cutting the expense. It's funny to hear that they find, like, I didn't understand why they wouldn't have access to that information in the first place. Anyway, I again, just more Trump derangement syndrome, and we have to disagree on everything you say or everything you propose because the opposite of you is good, apparently. So that's I mean, it's real developed mental structuring. You know what I
Oh,
mean? It's a
100%.
very, very robust mental framework they've got going there.
But in this case, I think you have to look at who brought this lawsuit to really understand, because it's one of, to me, the least trusted entities in the entire country. And then when you realize who brought the lawsuit, then you start to question, why did they want to block Elon Musk? So it was the American Federation of Teachers, which is the big red flag for me, and then the National Federation of Federal Employees. And so they thought that if they've got access to what they said was sensitive data of millions of Americans, that it would violate privacy rights. And here's what some of this sensitive data might include. So social security numbers, student debt information, employer details, and citizenship status. So, I mean, I think there's a million ways where Elon Musk could have, then Doge could have got their hands on that information if they needed it about individuals. But I wonder if there's a reason why the teachers union doesn't want or didn't want Doge to have access to like citizenship status when it comes to like Department of Education and some of the things they're doing. It's just interesting. Whenever the teachers union is involved in anything, I'm highly suspicious of the motivations.
I am too, and I wish more people had that same level of skepticism, and I wish a greater number of people would earnestly look into the teachers union and really try to understand the actors and the players and what they do and the roles that they play, because I think that there are a lot of people that hear teachers union and walk around with one concept in their head, and what is really there and what is going on, below the surface is far different than what most people would think. The amount that the union leaders are being paid is far different than people think. So, yeah, just I could not agree with you more. And as a matter of fact, I almost like have Trump derangement syndrome with them, meaning if they're involved, my assumption, and probably shouldn't be knee-jerk, is just that, oh, that's probably the opposite of where I'm going to be at in this
Oh,
ideological
so yours
debate, you
is
know?
teacher derangement syndrome, but teachers union,
Yeah,
you know.
but for the same reason that you don't trust them. I mean, they
Yeah.
are so consistently on the opposite side of what I think is families and children. And they're all about the teachers union. If you listen to a talk, you kind of sit there and you're like, well, no wonder we've got so many educational problems. The teachers' union's not even focused on making any
No.
better.
Money, power, control. Money, power,
Yep.
control. Not
Yep.
educating the youth of our nation so we can compete against China, as you so often point out. All right, let's get to our Doge Miss of the Week. As we knew, Doge didn't cut nearly enough to make any sort of meaningful dent in the national debt. So the U.S. Now topping $37 trillion, record obviously, for our total debt. So when we look at these numbers, they're not counting debt held by intergovernmental accounts like the Social Security Trust Fund. So I know we could argue about whether this is an actual accurate reflection of debt, but it's $37 trillion, and they say if you exclude intragovernmental accounts, it will reach 99% of the size of the US GDP this year.
Yeah, so in all reality, the debt is, I mean, the way I look at it, see, this is it should be more than that, because there's more debt outstanding than that. And the only reason that's not counting on the tally, like you said, is the intergovernmental agencies and the bigger or departments or whatever it was called. But the biggest culprit of that is the Fed. And I mean, the Fed owns what is it? Somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion worth of debt. So the argument being you can't owe money to yourself, so that doesn't count. Well, if that's the right way to account for it, why not just have the Fed buy all the debt and say we don't have any?
Yeah, there you go. Debt
I
free.
mean, I mean, that's why I think that's just ridiculous that you don't include it. The other side of it is if the United States was a corporation, you would include the off-balance sheet liabilities. So when we're talking about the United States debt at 30 trillion, 50 trillion, 90 trillion, it's not accurate. I mean, you're in excess of 200. Okay. And if that's just looking at, that's just looking at Medicare, Social Security, stuff like that. So, and the reason that I say that, like, we really need to start looking at that as a debt is that transaction has taken place, right? So people have been paying, you and I pay into Social Security every single year. There is a debt owed to us. Right? That debt is currently held by the federal government. So just because they're not paying on it now, that's still a debt. And so that's a whole nother topic. We were having a discussion about that, about Social Security.
Oh, I got it coming up next for you. We're talking about Social Security coming up to end the show.
I won't hop ahead
I know you just love talking about Social Security, favorite
then.
topic. Yeah, I mean, even if Doge had been able to do its very lofty goals of cutting, which obviously they didn't accomplish, it would have been like so minuscule in comparison to where our national debt is and bought us just a tiny little bit of time. But you know, and I'm not saying don't cut anything if you can't cut enough to matter. I mean, obviously I support anything that they're doing, but it just gives you a picture of just how bad our debt is. All right. In Doge adjacent news, Social Security. So they're talking about insolvency, obviously, which is a foregone conclusion if nothing changes. So its two main trust funds are projected to reach insolvency in 2034, which is really not that far away. Like, that's just around the corner. So there's obviously two options, right? You can cut benefits or you can increase taxes and have people paying more into Social Security. What do you think if those are the only two options, cutting the benefits or... like lowering benefits or increasing the input? What do you think?
Ironically, I don't think that they'll, I think initially they won't do either. So I think that they'll probably just issue, you know, just more deficit spending to pay for it. I mean, maybe they'll pass a tax. There's a lot of different things that they could do. And it's so funny because whenever we talk about Social Security, there's like this hopelessness, right?
Yeah.
The Social Security part of it really isn't as bad as people make it sound. It's the intransigence of government and the fact that we cannot come together and incalcitrance of government that you know, no one's willing to give. We cannot come together. And the other more important part about it is that's the problem with third rails, right? Like, if anybody brings that topic up, regardless of how pure their, you know, intentions are and regardless how good the plan is, it's just too easy to weaponize that politically against an opponent, especially in this environment.
Yeah.
Right. So the only way I think you'd get meaningful reform to any entitlements is if it was led by a Democrat. And I don't see that happening. I was talking about this today with a client of mine. Here's a couple interesting things you could do right out of the gate. Okay. Means test Social Security, right? I hate doing that. Truthfully, a guy like me will probably get means tested right out of it. So I'm arguing against myself here, but you know, if you've got a guy, and I'm not saying I'm this guy, but if you got a guy out there that's worth 50 or 60 million bucks, he doesn't need his $3,700 from Social Security.
Yeah.
Right now, is that the way it should work? No, because he got jobbed, right?
Yeah, he paid into it.
And it's not fair, and I agree with you, but they've made a lot of decisions that weren't fair, and they've left us, you know, with just really not a lot of great choices, right? We got to just work with what we've got. But means testing would be one of them.
Really quickly on means testing, you could allow all the, you know, woke progressives to opt out. Like, you could say, hey, you can opt out of your Social Security benefit to keep the program solvent for the less fortunate. You know, don't you think?
Well,
you know,
this is like how, you know, it's when I hear the rich liberal talking about they don't tax the rich people enough. And I go, you are aware the IRS has a segment or a line in there where you can donate extra if you'd like to.
Right. 100%. Right? Like, write a check.
Yeah. Well, here's 88. So right back to you. And this is one of the biggest hypocritical things in finance. All the guys that you'll hear saying that tax me more. They're all taking advantage of the carried interest loophole that only exists because guys that are billionaires run hedge funds and they grease politicians to keep it. Like, close that loophole tomorrow, right? Now, is that going to, and is one of these things a one-off fix? No, but I think that's where you're going to have to get there, right? You're going to have to take, you know, small, you know, that would be a bargaining chip, I would say, for the right side of the aisle, right? Sit there and go, hey, we need you to do this, and we'll throw the carried interest loophole on the table, you know? Yeah. And so you're going to have to get some horse trading like that. I just think in this toxic political environment, it's an election killer. If you come out talking about the reduction of any benefit, specifically Social Security. So
yeah, but then people are going to be real mad if it gets cut, because my understanding of it is there's an automatic benefit cut by law if the two main accounts are insolvent. And so, I mean, they could change that, right? In theory, they could change the law, but you'd be talking about an estimated 24% benefit cut for the average American. That's according to the Committee for Responsible Federal Budgeting, which is nonpartisan. That, or you would immediately raise payroll taxes by 3.65 percentage points to try to make up for the shortfall.
Yeah, I'm not. I was unaware. It's kind of a confusing backdrop because I know this. Social Security is a general obligation of the federal government, and that was changed back in the day, back in the 60s when they raided the lockbox to begin with. So I'm not sure about the procedures, but again, if we're looking at any potential disaster that can be avoided by both parties voting to print more money, that's what they're going to do.
I
You
mean,
know,
they
they'll
can
just.
find a way out of anything rather than do what's responsible.
Yeah, and here's and just I always go back to the politics of it. Why? Because it'd be too easy to win an election if your opponent was advocating for the other side of the argument, right? That's that simple to me.
Oh, 100%. All right, Zach Abraham, thank you so much. You're not here next week, but we'll be back the week after that.
Yes, I'm going to be fishing next week with my boys.
Oh, I love that so much. Oh my
Yes,
gosh.
gonna be
Build
fun.
memories, take pictures, all the stuff.
You bet. You bet.
All right. See you later.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good to see you, ladies.